This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August the 4th, episode 969. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Monday.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me. But I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Well, good morning, everybody. We hope you had a terrific weekend. Welcome here to Horses in the Morning. We're glad to have you join us this morning. Jamie will be with us in just a second. They had a torrential rain and a thunderstorm there, and I think it waterlogged her, and they don't get rain very often. So when it happens, I think that it just makes her a little slower. So she'll be here in just a second. No problem. And also, I wanted to mention that we were just talking about it before the show, that August the 8th, 2008, this Friday, was the first day of the Horse Radio Network. It was the first episode we put out in the Stable Scoop Radio Show, Helena and I, and that was 6 years ago. We'll be going into our seventh year next week, so we'll talk a little bit about the anniversary party we're going to hold here later in the month. And how you can be involved in that. We'll talk about that in just a second. But Jennifer, let's find out what's coming up on today's show first.
On today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, we've got a stampeding herd of horsey headlines to start out the show, including the latest from the World Equestrian Games. And I don't think the games have technically even started yet, and we've got news. And then mid-show, we're going to warm up the gray matter with David Saunders and Gloria Austin doing a little Horses in History, followed up in close proximity by Brent Boyd, who's going to take the mystery out of how to keep your riding arena groomed properly and lasting as long as it can. And at the finish of the show, the Wacky World of Horse Nation warms up the last muscles.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, we'll hold off until Jamie gets back to do the Daily Winnies. She'll just be here in a minute. Did you get any responses? Jamie's going to be gone the week of August the 18th through the 22nd, and the 18th, we're actually going to be at Ada, so we'll be coming to you live from Ada, from Philadelphia, like we do twice a year, and we're going to be co-hosted by one of our auditors. Colleen from Philadelphia goes to Colleen Peachy. She goes to Ada for Horse Nation every year, and she never stays till Monday because she always has to work. She has like a real job. She just wrote to me over the weekend and said she's taking off that day and she's going to co-host Horses in the Morning with us. And I'm very excited about that, Colleen. So we'll see you in Philadelphia, and you'll get to talk cool new products with us there at Ada. But we have two openings, the 20th and the 22nd, that Jamie's going to be on her vacation up there to Double D Ranch. I can never remember the name of that place.
Diamond D Ranch in Idaho.
Diamond D Ranch. Well, okay, close enough. But we have two openings, Wednesday and Friday, the 20th and 22nd, that we decided that we're gonna have our listeners or auditors fill in that day. So have you gotten any responses from that?
I have several emails from astute listeners
who are
volunteering to take one for the team and co-host the show with you. So we're gonna have to find some kind of a sorting system here.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with a audition. We're gonna have to come up with some kind of audition system. We'll definitely have to do that, and we'll figure that out and get back to everybody. We'll have to figure that out quickly because that's only 2 weeks away.
It's coming up quick there, Glenn.
yeah, we'll have to figure out what we're going to do there really quickly, and then we'll get back to all of you, and hopefully we can get two of you on. You know, it's kind of scary. We even have guests that don't want to come on the morning show because it's live, you know, and when we only had a couple listeners, that was one thing, but now we got tens of thousands, it's a different thing. And we, you know, I even have hosts, Philip will not come on the morning show and host. Reese has done it before, but Philip says, no way, I'm not doing live, I don't do live. And
you know why that is?
Why is that?
Reese is willing to drink before noontime, and Philip is not.
That's funny. Well, and, you know, they definitely, or Philip, you know, Philip, I have to edit Philip anyway, so I'm kind of glad because Philip takes some editing. So
maybe it's just as well that he doesn't come on. Now, is Philip in the Eastern time zone?
I think they're Eastern time zone where he is. He's above Toronto, and I think they're Eastern time zone. And, yeah, so it wouldn't be that. But, you know, they also work their horses first thing in the morning before it gets too hot.
Right.
So, for the professional riders, this is the time of day when they're doing all their work.
Yeah.
You know, afternoon, actually, he takes a break every afternoon, you know, like between 1 and 3 for all his paperwork and calls and things because it's, you know, it's the hottest part of the day. So that's usually when I hear from Philip. But, yeah, he won't do that. I think all the other hosts from all the different shows have hosted the morning show live. Wendy loves to do it, and Helena's done it on many times. So I think all of them have done it. Tammy obviously does it now. So, yeah. Well, let me talk about this, too, while we're on the subject. We are going to be having an anniversary party. It is Wednesday night, August the 20th. And this is just going to be a free-for-all. We're inviting all of our auditors and our listeners and past guests and all of the hosts will be calling in. We're going to do it at 7 o'clock. Colleen and I basically are going to host, because we were the first ones to do a show, we're going to host what we're calling an anniversary party. There's no agenda. We have no script, no nothing. We're just going to take calls. We're going to talk to people. We're going to have some adult beverages. We're just going to sit around and have a good time chatting with whoever calls in. And then we're going to do that for as long as people want to chat, we'll hang out. So that, and I know all the hosts will be calling in. And I'm sure a ton of our regular guests will be calling, and we hope a lot of our listeners will call. And that's going to be August the 20th at 7 o'clock in the evening. And we're doing it on our blog talk system, so it'll be the same phone number that we do for horses in the morning. And we'll be advertising that more as we get closer to the time. But that should be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to doing that coming up. Well, hello, Jamie.
Hello. What a miss. I'm sorry.
I was just talking about the anniversary party coming up, just sharing that with everybody. And we were holding off doing the Daily Winnies till you arrived. Hello. Yeah, I told everybody why you weren't here is because you had a thunderstorm with real rain and your brain was a little waterlogged.
Pretty close. That and a baby waking up way too early. Apparently, we have a woodpecker that likes to land on our roof, and he lands on the chimney. So the, like, metal grate on the chimney, he goes, bip, 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 and it reverberates through the entire house, and it woke up the baby.
We have a lot of woody woodpeckers here. We have families of woody woodpeckers here. So we see them all every day. We see woody woodpeckers around the house. I know exactly what you're talking about.
If they're not waking up your child, you love them. But now I want to shoot them.
All right, let's do our Daily Winnies. My Daily Winnie goes to my little rescue pony, Scooter, because little Scooter had to work hard on Saturday. It was the first time, Jamie, that he had to pull both of us in the cart at the same time.
He had
to pull both of our fat butts down the road and around half the block, and you would have thought he was going to die by the end. He was just dragging by the end. Now, let's keep in mind that this is a cart that rolls. I can pull the thing with two people in it. But he was convinced that this was the worst thing ever. It was also the first time he's gone out alone without anybody in front of him, either on a bike or, you know, Beaker out there. So he didn't have his comfort and security out in front of him, and he was on alert the whole time. He was ready.
Well, that's good. Nothing like pulling weight to get his little butt working and get a little more muscle out there. And with that heavy-ass weight carrying you guys.
You know, training-wise, he's doing pretty good. It's just now a matter of getting him fitter. So that's, you're right. That's exactly what we're doing. And at this time of the morning, he has his muzzle on now because he's getting too fat. So my little skinny, tiny pony about to die is now muzzled half the day. Which, by the way,
pony.
He doesn't like that at all.
No.
Not his favorite thing. All right, your turn.
Okay, I want some of you guys to sit down because this might shock you. And one listener in particular who is a standardbred harness owner and trainer. I want you guys to sit down because I'm about to give a daily whinny to a standardbred race because I watched one this weekend. Yes, that is right. The Hambletonian was this weekend, which is like the Breeders' Cup and Kentucky Derby all put together for the harness racers and standardbred racers, and it took place over the weekend. Why did I watch it? Because my husband saw that it said horse racing on DirecTV, and so he just recorded it. And he was like, I recorded some horse racing for you, and I turned it on. He's like, oh, it's this kind. I'm like, no, this is awesome. You recorded Hambletonian. This is great. So my daily winning goes to a guy named Jimmy Tactor. And Jimmy, we've actually had on the show before several years ago. Bo from Back on Track. Bo is like the proprietor of Back on Track. He and Jimmy Tactor grew up together and like trained racehorses together. And now Bo is the creator and inventor and whatever guru on Back on Track. And Jimmy Tactor is still training. And he has won two Hambletonians before. This Hambletonian, he was actually driving one of his horses. He said that he has to find the best driver for the best horse, so he let somebody else drive that horse. That was pretty funny. The favorite goes off, and he let somebody else drive that horse. So he took this horse named Trixton was the one he drove. Then he had a horse named Nuncio, and then he also was training a horse named Father Patrick, who was sent off as the heavy 2-5 favorite. This is super. I was like screaming at my TV. I don't know why. So I would like to play for you guys. The Hambletonian took place this weekend.
At 9-2, the 7 Trixton. At 5-1, the 5 Nuncio. So 2-5, post 10, Father Patrick. They're on gate for the 2014 Hambletonian. Here they come. Off and trotting, Datsuk is off stride, Don Can Go makes a break, and Father Patrick made a break, three breakers at the start. So it's Nuncio, and they are four deep around the first turn. J.J. Alex and Resolve from the inside, and caught wide is Trixton, fourth and gaining on the outside. J.J. Alex is now fifth, so Don Dorado from the second tier gets away in sixth. Then it's Harper Blue Chip, that one followed by Il Sogno Dream. Then the breakers. We had Datsuk far back along with Don Can Go and Father Patrick 26-3. A very hot quarter mile down the back stretch. Campbell in control with Nuncio. And he's holding Royal Ice at bay here. Royal Ice and Pierce. So they're mixing it up on the lead in the Hambletonian. Resolve on the inside. Trixton now inches up a closer third on the outside. J.J. Alex is fifth. Don Dorado close up sixth. Then a gap of five lengths back to Harper Blue Chip. Il Sogno Dream. Datsuk, followed by Don Can Go, and way back Father Patrick, the half, 54 seconds, it's Nuncio on the inside, and Royal Ice on the outside, Campbell and Pierce going at it, tooth and nail in the Hambletonian, Resolve, a perfect trip so far on the inside, and sitting just off them is Tactor, three wide right now, Tactor with Trixton, here comes Trixton, but Nuncio scoots off by two. Here comes Trixton on the outside. Tactor 1-2. Jimmy Tactor on the outside coming after Campbell. Nuncio 1-23. in the stretch of the Hamiltonian. It's Nuncio, and here comes Trixton and Jimmy Tactor, two Hall of Famers going at it. Campbell and Tactor, and Trixton is prevailing on the outside. Nuncio trying to battle back. A distant third is Il Sogno Dream. Trixton, Jimmy Tactor, it's a Tactortonian! Trixton does it over Nuncio. And then it was Harper, Blue Chip, and Il Sogno Dream. 150-3, Trixton wins the Hamiltonian.
Okay, Chelsea, you didn't just get goosebumps, okay? I know, it's harness racing. We all follow, it's hard to find it on television. And just listening to that call again, I got goosies. It was so exciting. It was so exciting. So Jimmy Tactor trained the first and second place horses. So congrats to him. And then we were trying to figure out before the show what the when a horse breaks, they're supposed to be trotting. Well, sometimes they break and take off into a gallop. And so, Jennifer, how are you explaining that to us? Like, what happens if they break?
When the horse breaks gait, he starts to gallop instead of trot or pace, whichever he's supposed to be doing. The driver is required to cause the horse to lose ground. In other words, he has to allow other horses to pass him. So if he keeps going at speed and the other horses can't catch up to him because he's going that fast, he can be eliminated. And what they'll do is they'll pull the horse to the outside of the track because it's safer out there because the horses aren't going fast. Just like in thoroughbred racing, the closer you get to the rail, the faster you're going.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
What? And when you see the other thing they have to deal with, these drivers, is it's a wider vehicle. You know, when you're riding a horse, you have the width of your legs. You know, your legs are kind of on the outside, but that's it. That's the only thing you have to get through. They have to actually get the cart through the traffic. And that's where most of the accidents come from in harness racing, is the wheels get hung up on each other. So they have to deal with that as well. But you did see at the beginning of that race, Jamie, when we watched it on the video, there were a couple of horses that broke right out of the gate and went into a gallop. And you saw them all get pulled up. And then you heard the announcer later in the race say, and the breakers are, and they were all toward the back. So,
yeah. Well, the Father Patrick was the heavy favorite, and that's the one that he said was his best horse. And he said he puts the best drivers with the best horses, and that was somebody else. And that was the heavy favorite, and that's the one that immediately started galloping as soon as the – and it's such an interesting way to break. And it was fun watching harness racing with my husband, who's never seen it before. He's like, what is that car doing out there? They have he's like, that's the strangest thing I've ever seen. They don't just start them. I'm like, no, they have to start them, like, all in a row. And there was one horse that was
kinda
dragging
hard to fit
behind
them in the gate.
And,
I
know. I know, right? It was really interesting to watch it with somebody, but it was a super exciting race, and congratulations to Jimmy Tactor. What I would like to do is get him on the show again. I mean, I'm sure that currently he's being flooded with media. Wait, no, he's probably not, because it's harness racing. So we can do this, you guys. I want Jimmy Tactor on the show.
All right, Jennifer, I'll reach out and we'll try and get him back. Yeah, we had him, I think, after his last win. I think we had him after he won the second time as when we had him on. But this horse paid really well, too. It paid, paid $10 or something. So,
yeah.
It paid pretty well. He did all right over the weekend, that's for sure.
Yes, he did.
Well, that's great. I like harness racing, but we kind of have soft spot because we used to go to the Red Mile in Lexington to watch it, and
yeah,
it's just a neat track, you know. So,
I hope nobody thought I was making fun of it. It's just hard to find. It's not like they televise it all the time, you know.
No. No, you don't find it a whole lot.
No.
All right, let's do the WEG update for today. We'll be doing them daily as we go through the World Equestrian Games. Here I have a couple of stories to go to real quickly. First is that the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games has a mobile application now where you can follow the schedule, live scores and results, the rankings, photos, news, videos, all the history of the games. It's all in there. And the biographies of the 1,000 competitors that will be competing. This is probably going to be one of your quickest, easiest resources for following what's happening with the games. Just go to Normandy2014.com and you'll see the app on there. You can download it. It's iOS or Android, so either one, iPhones or Android, you can download that app for the World Equestrian Games onto, or just go to the App Store and search for World Equestrian Games. You'll find it in there. Second thing is, tomorrow on our Ask the Equestrian Jumping episode here at Horses in the Morning, Emily will be here, and we'll speak more about the U.S. jumping team, who did very well overseas over the weekend. Did you see that? They very well.
McLean Ward, Reed Kessler, Marge Eagle, Sing Eagle, and Daisy Madden led from the start over the weekend, and Ireland and Belgium, the Dutch and the Germans, they ended up sharing the runners-up spot. It was a huge victory for the American show jumping team. Huge.
We'll talk more about that tomorrow with Emily when she is here talking show jumping. And then, we've been following this story since it happened. Jock Padgett, who was, Burley. He won the Burley horse trials, and then they withdrew, or they took his title away from him, made him give his money back because they had found a substance in the horse, and they suspended him for a long period of time, and he appealed it, and the appeal board 2 months ago said, okay, we're gonna take the suspension off because they're pretty convinced that it was food contamination that caused this problem.
But and it was found reserpine in Clifton Promise is the name of the horse, and you don't usually give reserpine to a horse that's gonna go out and run cross country, but that's
a sedative, right?
Sorry. Yeah, it's a long acting sedative.
Yeah, usually don't want to put them to sleep before they go jump the big jumps.
No.
Not a good idea. So anyway, the board that did this, the FBI panel, said that they were going to come down with a final verdict within 2 months. Well, he can't be put on the WEG team until the final verdicts come down. Well, it's been about 2 months, and it looks like the Federation in New Zealand thinks that it's going to come down in the next couple of days. If they say, yes, he wasn't at fault, it was in the food, that he's free to ride, then Clifton Promise will be at the World Equestrian Games. And he has some good teammates, okay, over there. Yeah, get this, Jamie. He'll join Nicholson. He'll join Mark Todd and Tim Price. So, yeah, they're going to be a team to reckon with over at the World Equestrian Games. So New Zealand has been, just kicking butt. And I think that we'll see them. I hope he gets on the team. I hope if that's all it was food contamination, he shouldn't be punished for that. So it's not his issue.
That's Sir Mark Todd, by the way. Sir,
yes,
Mark,
Sir
Todd.
Mark Todd. Yes,
Don't mess that up. That's amazing. So good luck to them. They're going to be a tough team to beat, whether or not Jock Padgett's on it or not. I mean, that's going to be tough.
One more.
Now I
want.
Oh, go
one
ahead.
More story. Okay, two of Britain's horses are having a rough time and not going to be at the games that we had talked about. Pippa Funnel, with her homebred horse Billy Beware, has withdrawn from the squad after showing signs of lameness. The 10-year-old gelding, and she basically pulled it. So Pippa is out with her horse, is not going to be doing eventing for Britain. And then also Nick Skelton, who is somebody that we talk about a lot on our European report on Wednesdays, rides a horse called Big Star. He's a show jumper, rides a horse called Big Star, has done very well recently. Nick has been winning a lot of stuff. Well, a Big Star has been ruled out for the selection for the games after a recurring suspensory problem. So he was hoping that this horse, which was his London 2012 horse, would have another shot, but at this point it doesn't look good. So that's what's happening in the world of WEG. Now, there's about 1,000, I wanted to apologize to everybody. There's 1,000 teams being named from across the world in 70-some countries. We cannot possibly cover it all. So we're just kind of picking out highlights of things that we've talked about in the past or, things like the app and stuff like that will help you better enjoy the WEG.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good job, Glenn. Good job, Glenn. I don't know how you pick out what you'd even talk about. It's so overwhelming. But that's why you hosted the 2010 World Equestrian Games Show. You're right. On top of it.
I'm on top of it.
Some monster news has happened in the horse world, and it is a horse named Jess's Dream. Do you remember who Jess's Dream is?
No.
Jess's Dream is a horse of a colt that is by Curlin and out of Rachel Alexandra. The mating of Horse of the Year and Horse of the Year. They bred in 2009, I can't remember what year he was born, but he's 2 years old. And Jess's Dream has now shipped to be trained with Kieran McLaughlin. 24-hour shipping from the Stone Street Training Center in Ocala and is now all the way up in Saratoga. And I guess when they unloaded all of the, there's three other two-year-olds, and Jess's Dream shipped with the three other ones. Well, they unloaded all the horses, and they put them all in stalls, and all these colts, they're tired, but they're screaming and whinnying, and Jess's Dream went in the stall and fell asleep. So he's like, I own this. I got it. So there's going to be a lot of news coming out about how Kieran McLaughlin is training Jess's Dream. Of course, Jess's Dream, named after Jess Jackson, who dreamed of the mating between Rachel Alexandra and Curlin before he passed away in 2011. So it was like in honor of, they named him Jess's Dream. So it's going to be, can you imagine Curlin and Rachel Alexandra, baby? Oh, gosh, can you imagine how stressed out the trainer must be? Like, please don't break. Please don't break.
Yeah, no pressure there. That horse was trained, Jess's Dream was here in Ocala, right?
Yep.
I think it's Stone Street. Yeah, not too far from us.
Yeah. I just said that. Well done. Well done.
Fly
Stone
up?
Street,
24-hour drive in a van?
I know. Well, I thought that too, but I thought maybe because they're 2 years old it was too stressful or so. I mean, my God, you have to bubble wrap that thing and take them out of the stall.
Yeah, put them on an airplane might be a little stressful for a two-year-old.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, what's going on out there in Arizona in your neighborhood, Gary? We got people beating police horses, but it wasn't your old horse, was it, that got whacked?
No, actually one of the first things I looked at. If you guys remember, I bought a horse that I then later found out was a retired police horse. And when he didn't work out as a jumper, I actually sold him back to the police department. And they actually use him. We called him Jack Daniels. They named him Phoenix. They use him to train officers. He's so good.
They want a police horse named Jack Daniels. They thought that would be a bad.
They did not. They did not. Chad named him, believe it or not. So they named him Phoenix because he rose back to being a police horse. Anyway, so there's a town in Phoenix called Scottsdale. And Scottsdale is like the party central where all those really dolled up drunk girls and guys go out to, you know, hook up and dance and whatever else. Whatever those crazy kids do these days. Just kidding. And so there's Scottsdale, and some drunk girl comes out of the bar and sees a police horse and walks up behind said police horse and slaps him on the rump. Well,
never
it spooks. No, God. Well, if you're not an idiot drunk girl, then you know you could get kicked, but he's a police horse and they don't kick. By the way, police horses, not great jumpers either. Really don't think that they should jump. They think they should climb over it. Anyway, back to the story. Some drunk girl in heels, you know, probably a broken heel, her makeup's run down her face, and she's got, like, raccoon eyes, and she's probably got one eye closed because she can't see, and there's, you know, toilet paper on her shoe. I'm envisioning she's already thrown up twice, you know, there's puke, like, down her shirt. This is the girl I'm imagining. None of that was in the story. I'm making it up. So this girl sees this horse. She's like, I'm going to pet it. And she goes out and she slaps it on the rump, whether she meant to hit it or pet it. She says she I was just petting him. Well, she's been arrested because she allegedly slapped a police patrol horse. You guys, you can't do that. Selma Iris Gonzalez, 25, is now accused. Because it's just a blanket thing that they do. She is accused of intent to kill or harm a service animal. So she went to jail.
Yeah. You can just picture that whole scene, too.
Yep.
You can just picture it. Hey, before we go to before we get into our content for today, we got a couple of recordings for you that we thought you would enjoy. I got to tell you, I came across this story and I went, "Oh my God, what a horrible story!" And then I saw that it was in a newspaper out of the Poconos in Pennsylvania, and what they do is they kind of rehash what happened years ago in history in the local area. Well, this was in the Poconos. This is in 1931. You know how everybody's trying to get the horses out of New York City because they say horses and, you know, cars shouldn't be together, and like it's
right.
A new thing, right? Well, it's not a new thing. Listen to this. This was in 1931, and I don't know any more than what I'm going to read to you. But talk about terrifying. Plunging wildly down the road, a runaway team of horses pulling a careening empty hay wagon hurtled headlong against the LeSable Coupe, which I think was a bigger car, if I remember from my old car history, operated by C.L. Ward of Washington Square, Delaware, sending the wagon pole through the windshield straight at the driver. And one of the horses up on the hood of the car where its right leg plunged through the windshield at the Ward's daughter. Father and daughter were uninjured. How can you be uninjured after that? I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
By the way,
I really don't know.
How can you be uninjured after that? That is the most bizarre thing. I was trying to find the rest of the story, but I couldn't because it was happened in 1931. But you could just bizarre. There's a bizarre story for you. I'd like to see that pole coming at you. Ugh. Maybe the glass wasn't as shattery then or something.
Actually, I think it was way more shattery then. That was before the fancy glass they put in windshields now that it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, you're right. It probably was way more shattery than it is now. But anyway, that was the story that I found in history that was like, wow, that'd scare the crap out of you. All right, let's
pulling a careening empty hay wagon. I like the way it's written as if it was a chapter in a Louis L'Amour novel.
Yeah.
Hurtling down.
Exactly. Hurtling down the road. And the horse's leg, oh, man, the horse couldn't have been well. Anyway, we're going to take a break for Omega Alpha, and then we're going to come back with a couple of recordings for you this morning that we think you're going to enjoy. So I'll be back to explain those in just a minute.
Omega Alpha specializes in natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance, and they know how much personality and behavior can factor in the quality of our relationship, whether we're an Olympic-level competitor or modest weekend warrior. That's why they've created three different all-natural formulas to help us get the most out of our horse-to-human relationship. Chill Liquid, formulated especially for horses with pre-performance jitters. Chill Ultra Pace, with the added benefits of B1 and magnesium. And Premare, the hormone balancer for witchy mares, and you know who you are. Look for all of Omega Alpha's all-natural formulas at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
Normally we have Dr. Chang here on this day of the month, but he is on vacation, so he'll be back again next month, and we always enjoy seeing him. And I know I'll see some of his people over at Ada this month in Philadelphia, so we're looking forward to that. We have I have a recording here I think everybody will enjoy. If you listen to the driving show, you've heard this before. You can come back in 10 minutes, or you can listen to it again. It was very interesting. This is a segment we're doing once a month. David Saunders, who was coachman to the Queen for 20 years, joins me as co-host. Wendy takes 1 week a month off. And David joins me as co-host, and his boss, Gloria Austin, from down just south of where we are in Florida, has one of the largest carriage collections and is one of the most knowledgeable people on horses and in history that we've ever met. And she's doing these segments for the driving radio show called Horses in History. And this one, David gets to interview her, and he did it at her museum down there, which is of her carriage collections, almost 200 carriages in there. And they were by the chariots talking about the history of chariots. And I think you all enjoy this. And we'll come back, and we have another one for you on arenas. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But first, let's learn a little bit about the history of chariots.
It's time for Horses in History with Gloria Austin.
We're actually in the museum today, and Gloria's going to do some more on the history of driving. Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you, David. We talked a little bit about the chariot and John Keegan's reference to the use of the chariot in history. It was one of the earliest forms of using the horse, and the chariot was used for ceremonial reasons. It was used for hunting. It was used for warfare. And oftentimes the chariot weight was very lightweight, particularly the Egyptian and Hittite chariots. They oftentimes weighed less than 100 pounds, and that was so they could be easily disassembled. And I always equate it to the Egyptians taking the chariot apart and then transporting it on a reed boat across the Nile River. Well, the chariot was disassembled so the wheels would come off, the body was one piece, and the pole would come apart from the carriage. And in the museum, we're standing here in front of a reproduction of the chariot that was found in King Tutankhamun's tomb. And the original one, if you ever get to see a picture of it or get to go to the Cairo Museum, you will see that the chariot was originally discovered in the corner of his tomb, and it was all disassembled and kind of stacked in the corner. They did this because in earlier times, they thought would need these things in their afterlife. So they would oftentimes take their chariots with them, they would take food with them, and a whole variety of things. And in some instances, people were actually taken to the tomb. I hate to tell you about this, David, but sometimes they were taken alive. And in China, Emperor Qin actually had thousands of replicas of his chariots and horses, chariot horses, and thousands of terracotta soldiers that he took to his tomb. And those can be seen in Xi'an, China today. And I've been blessed to be able to go there and to see these chariots and chariot horses.
Looking at this chariot now, is this a ceremonial chariot? Because there only looks like there's room for one person on there. And I remember reading that a lot of these chariots had a driver and an archer. So would this just be a ceremonial chariot we're looking at now?
This would be a ceremonial carriage or chariot. But it would have actually, they would have still had two people perhaps inside of it. One, the charioteer would have stood on the right side and the archer on the left side. And even though it were ceremonial, King Tutankhamun wanted to be known as a great warrior, even though he may not have actually gone into battle all of that much. But he wanted to be known as a warrior, so he would oftentimes drive this chariot for ceremonial occasions. It's gilded. The original is gilded. This has got gold paint on it to represent the original. But the designs on it are decidedly Egyptian. And we have some other Egyptian type drawings where you could see what the mask of King Tutankhamun looked like, and then also some of the representations of him driving this chariot. And the representations do show him alone.
Looking at the picture, you can see some sort of harness. Let's talk about the harness and maybe the type of horse you would imagine they would have been driving.
Correct.
Not just about the chariot, but let's talk about what sort of harness. This is obviously for two horses.
Yes.
What type of horses and what was the rudimentary type of harness like?
Right. It was called a neck and girth harness, and the horses that they used were probably very small. In fact, many people speculate they were so small that they were best used, put two of them to a chariot, rather than to ride them into battle very much, as I suggested in my last commentary. So there would have been two, or in the case of larger, maybe racing chariots, there might have been four horses called a quadriga. But a pair of horses would be put to this type of ceremonial carriage, and the neck and girth harness was the earliest type of harness, and it was an adaptation from the yoke-type harness that was used with the bovines or the cattle or the oxen that they used in the very early days. So there would have been a yoke across the top of the horse's neck with a light strap of cloth or leather around the neck, and then one about the girth. So it was called a neck and girth harness. And if you want to go to Joseph Keegan's work, Joseph Needham's work, he depicts the evolution of the harness from the neck and girth harness to the breast collar harness and then on to the full collar harness. The full collar harness was a very specialized harness and very important in history because it was the first harness that was anatomically developed or developed anatomically for the horse. It was the what you would see us coaching in today, which is a collar that's rather thick and stuffed with straw and draped around the horse's neck.
What year was that we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about it evolved in China probably in the 400s, but didn't get to Europe until 600 A.D. So it came from China to Eastern Europe and then on to Western Europe and then on to America as little as 500 years ago.
And what about, everyone talks about bits these days. What were the bits necessarily, original bits made of? What are the earliest type of bits? What were they driving the horses in?
Well, originally, probably they just had a rope or a piece of leather through the horse's mouth, or it might have been made even of bone, the very early bits.
That's interesting.
Once, in fact, I had a horse that was involved in an experiment at a college to see if they could tell if the jaw would of a young horse would change if it had either a rope or leather lash through its mouth or a bone in its mouth, or they were trying to determine when metal was first used as a bit for bits in horses. And but the early chariot bits were probably of metal and probably of what you might call a snaffle type, or it would have been a direct pull. But those bits were very unique, and that really requires a whole other lecture to get into the types of bits that would have been used in the very early days. And we do have a lecture, David. You and I both lecture on bits and bitting in horses. And in that lecture, we follow the evolution of the bit from the very earliest of metal bits, because those are the ones that the archaeologists can find and let us know something about, right on through to modern bits that you yourself have been involved in the design of some of these modern bits that we use today on our horses for more modern combined driving. With traditional driving, which I do more, those bits would have very traditional English style or European style cheek pieces. And when you drive multiples, they're often of the curb style. We seldom use snaffle bits. And the snaffle bit just means a direct pull. A curb bit is one with a mechanical advantage. And when you come to drive four horses, they're very powerful animals, usually 12 to 1,400 pounds, the type of horses we drive. So you really need the mechanical advantage of a curb bit when you're driving four or multiples, even multiples.
And I'm looking at this chariot now, and it's got a fairly delicate pole, and it's a fairly short pole. So what size do you think these horses were? What do you think the biggest of them were?
Oh, I can imagine. I know the replicas we have in the Emperor Qin Garden of the Chinese horses. You can put your arm over the top of their withers, so I would think that they would oftentimes be 14 hands, sometimes a little larger, but very typically they would have been driven to the neck and girth type harness.
And what type of horse do you think they were? Do you think they were kind of an Arabian breed?
They were definitely horses that could survive in the desert area, because, as you know, they were used in the area now that's in such turmoil in Iran, in the Mesopotamian Valley, and in Egypt, which is a lot of it is desert country. So they were small horses, but they didn't have the refined heads of contemporary Arabian horses. So they weren't typically what you and I would call Arabian horses today. Deb Bennett has done a lot of nice research on the evolution of the horse and what is sometimes called the oxhead horse, or a horse that was small but less refined than the Arabian horse of today. And they would have been a cantering breed of horse, probably, because they would have sprinted into battle, discharged their arrows into the opponent, and then raced out of the battlefield. They would have also taken replacement foot soldiers into the battlefield with chariots. And so oftentimes you'll see that their handles or places where you can grab hold of the side of the chariot. And that was so that you could drop a warrior off or an archer off and then pick up maybe a wounded fighter or warrior and then take him behind the lines of battle. So, in fact, Queen Boadicea, I think she used to traipse around the country over in your England, and she used to have the heads of her captors lashed to the side of her chariot, as I believe, traipsing around England. She loved to defeat the Romans, I think it was.
That's right. Well, thanks again, Gloria, and we'll look forward to listening to you next month, and we'll be fascinated to hear what you're talking about next month. Thank you very much, Gloria.
Horses in History is sponsored by the Equine Heritage Institute. For almost 20 years, the Equine Heritage Institute, a 501c3 charity, has been educating, celebrating, and preserving the history of the horse and its role in shaping civilization and our lives. EHI has a vast array of educational offerings, including CAA driver preparation and certification, seminars to enhance driver skills, demonstrations of unusual carriage turnouts, and lectures on the timeline of the horse and the timeline of the carriage. These and other offerings are available at either Gloria Austin Stables or your site or horse or carriage event. Contributions to the Equine Heritage Institute are tax deductible, and your generous donation ensures ongoing support for the horse and its history in shaping our world and civilization. EHI is also actively involved in research and the preservation of the carriage as a functional work of art. Contact them today at equineheritageinstitute.org. You can make a difference. Well, that was David Saunders and Gloria Austin on Horses in History, found over at the Driving Radio Show at drivingradioshow.com. You can hear the rest of the episode that David and I did last week. If you would like to take a listen to that, just head on over or find it on the app, iOS or Android, search Horse Radio Network, and you'll find the Driving Radio Show on there as well. Well, our song for today is coming up next, and it's a new one we haven't heard here before. It's by our friend Bren Hill, and this is Brianna off of his Ode to Selway CD.
Brianna, saddle up that pony and ride him one last time, before the winds of change blow you away. Ride him till you're out of your troubled mind, and everything's gonna be okay. I promise somebody hears the dreams you pray. And cowgirls and angels are one in the same. And if you're gonna be true, you're gonna have to be strong. And when you find yourself all alone, just whisper my name and hold on. Hold on. Brianna, that she can do for you. And cowgirls and angels are one in the same. And if you're gonna be true, you're gonna have to be strong. And when you find yourself all alone,
that was Brianna by Bren Hill. And as I said, you can find all of Bren Hill's music at brenhill.com. Well, Jennifer, you had the opportunity to interview the next guy, so tell us what this is about.
I had a chance to sit down with Brent Boyd, who with his wife owns Surefoot Arenas in Colorado, and they are a builder. They do arenas indoor and outdoor, big and small. And I had them come on to talk a little bit about how arenas are built, how they're maintained, what types of footing that are available in this day and age, because I got questions from listeners curious about those topics. So we sat down, and this particular interview, we talk about how to groom your arena, what machines are available in this day and age, and the different types of machines appropriate for different types of footing. How often to groom, and also how the weather affects the footing and the grooming process.
All right, very good. So let's take a listen to Jennifer with Brent Boyd.
And I'm so happy to welcome back to the show Brent Boyd from Colorado, who is the chief cook and bottle washer at Surefoot Arenas. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the machinery that one has available to keep the arena groomed, and it needs all the help it can get when it gets ridden on hard and long all summer long. So maybe, Brent, you could help us out with what is the function of the machine? What's it supposed to do for you, regardless of what kind of a riding arena you have?
Well, good afternoon, Jennifer, and thank you for having me. That is a great question. The function of your groomer is to basically keep your surface or your footing in optimum condition for the horse and for the rider.
So optimum condition, what is optimum condition to maintain the properties of the footing as it was installed? Am I close to there?
That's absolutely correct, Jennifer. We want to try to replicate the footing as it was first originally installed that first week and to keep it maintained as when it was first installed. And by properly grooming it, that will help keep that surface nice and smooth and in good working condition for you and the rider.
All righty. So let's say we have a natural surface in our arena. We have a sand mix that was put in, and I never groom my arena. I just ride on it like crazy. What's going to happen over the years to my arena if I never groom it?
Well, you know, Jennifer, I'm a firm believer in only grooming when it's necessary. In other words, if you've got a lot of traffic in your arena and it's had a whole lot of horses on it throughout the day and the footing's just really uneven, that's when you want to maintain it. If you're just a private facility and maybe you have three or four horses and you're just riding at leisure, I personally recommend people only groom it as necessary. A lot of your grooming is aesthetics, and it certainly looks nice and pretty when it's all groomed.
Yeah.
But you have to realize, too, that each time that we groom it, it can have a tendency to kind of displace your footing a little bit. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. We want it to look nice and pretty to ride on, but the ultimate function of your groomer is to keep it maintained to the way that you like it. So if a person doesn't like seeing all those hoof prints in there, they can certainly groom it every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I like I said, to just groom it as necessary. So if you had an arena that you never groomed, I would say it'd probably be pretty rough shape. if it was never groomed, if it was like a sand mix type thing, it would probably be all stuck into the corners, would be my bet.
Oh yes, that famous rut you get around the outside track of the riding arena. Used to hate those. Yes. Despise the rut. Now, so grooming is important, but over grooming is not more is not necessarily better.
That's correct. More is not necessarily better. Not necessarily better. Like I said, until a person is really familiar with their grooming apparatus and the type of footing they have, the more you groom it, like I said, you can have a tendency to actually displace it a little bit from one side to the other and keep it out of the consistent fit that you're looking for.
Okay. So that the next question, of course, is there have been probably in the past 15 years all sorts of incredibly whiz-bang footing grooming devices invented that you can drag along behind your tractor. Tell us about some of the most common ones and why you would choose one over another.
Great question.
Versus straight load, you know?
Yep. So when we're talking about, like, your synthetics, you know, your waxes or your polymer-type footings, you know, like the Martin Collins or a GGT or something of that nature, that's been sticky. I really recommend the Martin Collins groomer because it is specifically designed for your synthetics and your waxes and your polymers. There's just not a better one out there. Now, for just about anything else out there, I really like the Parma groomer. It has so many different ways to adjust it that a person, once they learn how to use it properly, can really, really, truly keep their footing in optimum shape. And they're very, very cost effective. Now,
so
there's
is a Parma groomer a brand name, or is that a design, or
that's the brand name? It's Parma, P A R M A groomer, and they actually came from the agricultural industry. You know, they do all sorts of farming implements and stuff. So this is just a really, really nice groomer. They make them anywhere from 5 feet wide up to 8 feet wide. And what's really nice about the little 5 foot wide ones is you can actually get a three-point attachment, which if people don't understand what a three-point is, that's on the back of your John Deere tractor that you would normally put your groomer on. Well, they make a little attachment, a little three-point attachment, that you can put on your little five-foot Parma groomer and put that right on the back of your ATV to groom your little indoor if you've got a smaller indoor. So it's pretty nice to do that. I see people, you know, using chains and harrows and stuff. At Parma, you can get them into the corners. It works really well.
Okay, so folks who are not familiar with Parma groomer, I did a quick Google, and the Parma groomer is the one that you see going around at the horse show, that right behind the tractor wheels, there are a whole set of sort of springy U-shaped
tines
that loosen thing up, and
they're
then at the back,
correct.
And at the back, there's this little rolly things that makes it all pretty and smooth again. So that's
right.
The Parma groomer. They're very common. You see them at La Horse shows everywhere. Yes.
I'm a big fan of them, Jennifer, because they're so easy to use and they're so easy to maintain. They just work incredibly well. Now, there's also another one. It's called a Ravel, a 4-in-1. And they're pretty neat, but it takes a pretty experienced individual to use those because you can actually set that right on top of the base and follow the contour of the base if your base is not really level to keep your footing consistent. But it takes a little bit of experience to run one of those. That's why I'm a big fan of the Parma groomer for organics and the Martin Collins for your synthetics.
Interesting. So now I have to Google this arena groomer. Which one is this one called again?
The Martin Collins.
The first one was the Parma. And the second one is called?
The Martin Collins.
The Martin Collins groomer? Okay.
Martin Collins Arena groomer?
Yeah. There it is. Martin Collins groomer. There we go. An Arena Master Supreme Plus.
That's it, the Arena Master Supreme.
Okay, so visually, at first glance, it looks similar in that it has the little teeth at the front and a rolly thing at the back. So what makes this one more complicated to get right, do you think?
Well, it's not necessarily more complicated to get right. It's a little bit more specific for your synthetics and your kicker
okay.
footings.
Yeah, the rolly thing in the back definitely looks different on this one, even to an amateur eye such as my own.
Mm-hmm. They are. And if you look at the S-tines up in the front, that's just a little bit different, too.
Okay.
They actually ride a little bit different.
Okay, and that makes sense because most, correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the expert here, and I'm just going off of amateur observations, natural footings, such as sand mixtures, the horse tends to move through the footing much more so than the synthetic footings. The horse tends to move on top of.
That is
in other
absolutely
words,
correct.
So am I observing this accurately in that? So you would need a very different kind of a groomer, so I guess your synthetic surfaces, you don't want to be digging down in there with those tines and kicking it all up.
No, that's absolutely correct, Jennifer. Absolutely correct. Because on your synthetics, what we're really doing is we're really only cutting the top 2 inches or so, just the very top of it. It's usually put in at about 4 or 5 inches thick. And that Martin Collins Arena Master is designed to cut the very top surface however deep you want. If you want to loosen up the top 3 inches, you just adjust it for 3 inches. If you only want to cut it for 2 inches, you cut it for 2 inches. So when people are coming in to jump, they're going to only, just barely scarify the top surface because they want it a little bit firmer. When the dressage people come in, they might cut it down to 2.5 inches so it's a little bit looser. So that Martin Collins, that Arena Master, actually works quite well for different riding disciplines. So if you're a hunter-jumper, you're going to want it a little bit thicker, a little firmer. So you're not going to set it down quite so low.
Interesting.
Likewise,
stuff.
If you're dressage, you're going to set it down a little bit lower to soften it up a little bit.
Very good. So, in conclusion, it is groom when you need to. More is not always better. Get the right machine for the type of footing you have. And then if you have more questions, you're going to contact Brent because he's the expert. Where can folks find you on the web?
They can find us at surefootarenas.com.
Easy to find. Thank you again, Brent, for stopping by. It's been a lot of fun.
Horses, the ultimate frontier. These are the adventures of Horse Nation. Its weekly mission to explore strange equestrian behaviors and to exploit horse humor in the wacky world of horses.
And this is the time of day where we usually introduce Leslie Wiley from Horse Nation. However, Leslie is not here. She couldn't come today.
No,
so we're
she called off.
Do
she called
powder.
In sick. No, actually, she just called in.
She just called in and said,
I'm done.
No,
I'm not coming.
She let us know, ahead of time that she wasn't going to be here. But we decided to go on without her. We're going to push on, press forward.
That's right, because, she always has good stuff for us to talk about anyway. So we might as well talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, she does
and
our thinking.
You know
them.
What's nice is she does our thinking for us. So instead of us having to put together the 20 signs you're secretly horse crazy, kid traps and adult body, that would have required thought and effort and time. This way she does it. We don't have to. So
exactly.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Exactly. So the first thing we're going to talk about is what you said, 20 signs you're secretly a horse crazy kid trapped in an adult body. And rattling off one of them, like I said, I think in one of the previous shows recently, is that if I was not married and I was my age and single, my house would be decorated like a 12-year-old girl. It's already pretty close, but like I've limited my Briar horse collection to just famous horses. I'm still buying, you know, whatever. I have like in my office right now, there is a headshot of Seattle Slough. Above my desk is the famous photo of Secretariat galloping, you know, in the Belmont Stakes, and Ron Turcotte is the jockey looking back. On my other side is a drawing I did of my horse that I had about 10 years ago. Like, the decor in here is clearly it's my office. So roll with it. You're going to have to deal with it, husband. But other places in the house I've had to let fighter pilot stuff happen and, like, airplane stuff and all that other kind of crap that he likes.
So is there airplane stuff? What kind of airplane stuff does he have around? Because now you got me interested.
Oh, okay. Well, what you have to do when you have a when you're in the Air Force, they give a lot of awards and plaques all sorts
especially
of crap.
Especially when you get up to the rank he's at, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
So we have what's called the I Love Me room, and every fighter pilot's wife calls it that because it's basically a shrine to I love me, and here's why. It's like all the lithographs and plaques and all kinds of crap that he won, and so I hung it up in the spare bedroom. Like you can see it in the spare bedroom. It's like us with a tack room as a woman. What we all need, even if we don't have horses at our house, we all need our own tack room because in our tack room is where we put our ribbons and our framed pictures that we buy from horse show photographers. Am I right?
Yep.
We need tack rooms, even if we don't have horses at home. I'm going to have to always have a tack room to put those pictures and ribbons in. Now, Horse Nation says that one of the signs that you are a horse chick, a horse crazy kid trapped in an adult body, is when you doodle ponies on your piece of paper in meetings. I do that. Jennifer, you're going to have to join in because you're a girl.
Jennifer's done that since she was two. I mean, she still does that. She's over there doodling right now, not paying any attention to us, I guarantee you.
Hey.
See? I told you.
She looked up. I was rearranging the horsey snapshots on my bulletin board next to the desk.
See? Yeah, I told you she wasn't paying any attention.
She's searching on Pinterest.
This one, too, when you come into some extra cash and think of it in terms of how many lessons it will buy you or how much crap you can get at the tack shop. Either one of those.
When you buy silly things to make your wildest childhood dreams come true and the picture that they have is a white pony that they've attached a unicorn horn to. Oh, my God. I had a white pony named Snowflake growing up, and I'm pretty sure she was a unicorn. Like, only I could see her horn. But this would have made it visible to everybody. Gosh, I wish they had Pinterest and Amazon back when I was a kid. That would have been dangerous. Or Etsy, whatever.
I was looking on this list, too, and this one hits home to horse husbands. When your collection of saddle pads borders on the absurd, and I would throw in bits, and, you know, maybe, Jennifer, we could make that the question of the day. What is your obsessive collection? Is it saddle pads? Is it bits? Is it, you know, whatever? Whatever your obsessive collection is. Is it riding shoes? You know, what is it? So, Jamie, what is your obsessive collection?
Well, just the two things you mentioned, you can never have enough bits, but I have an ungodly amount of saddle pads. Chad's like, why do you need all these saddle pads? I'm like, well, you go to a horse show and you need a new white dressage pad. Pretty much every show, because I just trash everything. So I've got a large collection of white dressage pads, but then you have to get fun colors. And I've tended to change my eventing colors for whatever suits the horse I'm riding best. So, like, I have a chestnut. Like, they look good in red, or, you know, my bay horse looks good in blue. You don't know what you're going to need, so you have to have them all and never throw anything away or never sell a saddle pad. It's like selling a pair of shoes. You don't do that.
We know a lot of professional riders, and I know several women professional riders who must have at least 100 pairs of riding breeches. They just have tons. Most of them don't have too many, like, you know, boots. You tend to wear the same boots because they get comfortable and you like them. But riding breeches galore. And then the guys I know who are professional riders have two pairs, the dirty pair and the not-so-dirty pair, and they keep rotating those. But the women will have 100 pairs of riding breeches.
Well, so, women, and at least what I do, is if I find a pair of riding pants I like, I'll buy two or three. Because if I like them.
That's smart, actually, because they won't be there next time you got to look for them.
Chad says that there's one place that owns me, and they really should advertise because they own me, and that is Tack of the Day, which I know you actually created Tack of the Day.
Yeah, I started that. Yeah, years ago.
You don't get enough credit. But unfortunately, you didn't provide me with any sort of special shopping discount, and I get something in the mail like every week from Tack of the Day, and Chad's like, that website owns you. Like, yes, but at least I'm buying things at deep discounts.
We first started that. That was back when I was working with Bit of Britain, and we just needed a way to get rid of some of the old merchandise that was sitting around that we had nothing to do with. And I said, why don't we just start a site that kind of designed it after Woot, which if any geeks out there will know what Woot is, and kind of designed it sort of after that. But I added a lot of, my humor to it. And it was there. It was mostly in the beginning, if you remember right. I don't know if you were there from day one, but in the beginning, it was mostly about the humor and less about the products, and then it sort of switched because we didn't have that many products. So it was mostly about just getting people to come back and buy the ones that we did have. It was meant to go for 30 days and be over. That was never meant to go for as long as it has, probably 8 years.
Yeah.
It was never meant to be that.
it's funny, but it's definitely, like Groupon and Woot have taken over the humor. But now you just like Tack of the Day, then our bonus item, and then there's Tack of the Day 2, and then there's a closeout section. Oh, my gosh.
That all happened
there's
after
so
I
much,
left.
Whew, there's so much horse shopping you can do. And the thing is, Glenn, the point of this whole thing was I bought, when I was pregnant and a little bigger, two pairs of riding pants that they're denim, and then they have like the, their full seat denim breeches. I love them so much, and now they're too big, but I still wear them. I love them so much. I'm glad they're too big, but I can't get rid of them. And, like, I guess I obsessively keep riding pants, too, but I only have, like, six pairs of riding pants.
Well, I think the first time it really – and I had been with Jennifer for a long time at this point, but the first time it really sunk into me at how crazy horse women were was we had our first – and you remember years ago, I don't know if they still do them, but we did our first shirt-a-thon where we had a multitude of different riding shirts in one day, and we would just run them till they ran out and then sold out and then go to the next one. We sold, I must have been, I think, 500 shirts in one day, and the same people were buying 10 different shirts. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that people, that horse women were crazy. It kind of started really sinking in that how crazy they were.
You know, I just bought two shirts from Tack of the Day. They were like literally
you were one of those
ago.
Crazy people.
Oh, my God. But they're like little polo shirts, and they look really professional. I'm the kind of girl that rides in like an old T-shirt that I got at Goodwill. No, these are like real professional looking, and they were really on deep discount. They're like $60, and they were $17 a piece, but I had to tell Chad they were $7 a piece because that's how we roll.
We were owned our tack business. We were always shocked at the number of women that would come in with credit cards that their husbands knew nothing about. Nothing about. They would say, "Oh, this doesn't exist."
I wouldn't do that. But yeah, just a little. Thank God he didn't listen to this show. But just a little. I just smooth it over a little bit. He just buys golf clubs off eBay. Okay, like he buys golf clubs all the time. So we're even.
And they're expensive. They're not cheap either.
No. Right. No,
the whole
not.
Game isn't cheap. Hey, there was another one on this list I wanted to mention too. And everybody raise their hand who has taken a selfie with your horse. My hands up, by the way.
Of course.
Yeah.
If you're a horse girl, and the other thing is, in teaching lessons, I really realize this. And you talk about the saddle pad obsession. It starts early because I have the girls that are like 11 and 12 that buy their own saddle pads and bring their saddle pad with their helmet to their lesson every week, and then they wear a shirt that matches. And every little girl has started making polos, polo wraps, so then they get the polo wraps to match the saddle pad that matches their shirt, and it's like the cutest thing ever. So that's why you have to keep all these saddle pads, and you never get rid of a polo wrap. You just never know when you're going to need to match. And the selfies are adorable, too.
Well, let's go on to the next one, because this hits home with you right now, because you just last week Well, I won't say you bought it. Your lovely husband, who obviously loves you dearly, bought you, although you're never going to get to use it, bought you a brand-new Dodge 3500 diesel pickup truck. And Jennifer and I owned, by the way, we don't get very attached to cars, but we owned a 2500 diesel when they first came out with the Cummins engines. And we owned that for a number of years, and it was the only car that we have sold, of all the cars we've owned, that we probably almost cried a little bit when we sold it, because it's nothing like a Dodge Ram.
My first Dodge Ram, when I had to trade it in for our last Dodge Ram, I sobbed, especially when they tried to, like, talk me down on the money. I was like, how dare you? It's the best truck in the world. I, like, went out and, like, removed my steering wheel cover. It was, like, really sad. And then we got the next one because Chad, you know, he likes to upgrade. And then we have our, if anybody needs a Dodge 2500 quad cab turbo diesel black, we have one for sale, but he couldn't wait. So he just financed the whole dang thing and went to Texas, flew to Texas, bought a diesel in San Antonio because they're everywhere out there, but not even a diesel. We've always had diesel, but this one's a dually. It's a monster. It is the biggest truck. It's like driving a giant cruise ship. Anyway, and it's that comfortable, too. It's super comfortable. But they did an article on 20 reasons why diesel trucks are the worst. And I got a little offended.
I laughed because, at that, though. I said, right after she bought her diesel truck.
Now, a lot of these are not, they don't have anything to do with the diesel. But I agree that it's more like if you own a diesel, we're going to vent. Because there's nothing better than having your horse in the trailer and you cruising down the road and knowing that nothing is stressed out. Like, your engine is just purring along carrying this big trailer with a bunch of horses. It's great. However, the things that are annoying about having a diesel is what they wrote, number one, is when you pull into a gas station, especially if you've got a truck trailer attached, there's one diesel pump and some jackass has parked there and they're getting gas from that, and then they run in for coffee and then they go to the bathroom, yeah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you're like, hello, I need some freaking diesel. Like, I make a point when I'm in my car not to park in the diesel once. I wish everybody would do that. Did
you know,
that
you're
ever
lucky.
Irritate you?
When we had the diesel, you couldn't find diesel pumps. You had to go to a truck stop. You know, it was only in the last 6 or 7 years that they've actually started putting diesel pumps in regular gas stations. You never saw that before. That was just unheard of. You had to find a truck stop. We always had to go. And then, I don't know if I'm the only dumb one, but have you ever pulled into one of the big truck stops, diesel pumps, where there's pumps on both sides and you have to figure out how to use the damn thing? Ugh, that's awful.
Those are too scary.
I never could figure out how to use them. And I always pulled in, and I always had to use the pump that was the extra pump on the other side, you know, that they use for their extra tank, and I could never get the damn thing turned on. Oh, I can't tell you how many times I would turn around and come back through the other way.
Yeah, that's a lifestyle for those people. Well, in Quick Trip, QT, I'll call you out, because they still don't have diesel. I'm still irritated because Quick Trip has great drinks. And I always want to run in and get a drink. So Circle K is my new thing now.
How about the price of diesel? That has to kill you. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah. When I first bought my first diesel, diesel was cheaper than gas.
Yeah,
and now,
it was.
Because
that's
it's
right.
more in demand in Europe, it's more expensive, and that's so irritating. Another thing is this is a new thing for me. This is awesome. This isn't even on their list, but when you're in a truck that's bigger than another guy's truck, it's just more awesome.
You know,
nobody will hit on a girl in a truck bigger than theirs.
People have to look at you too, because I do this. If I see a 3500 pull up at the gas station, and we see a lot of those around here in Ocala, and then you see a girl your size, 5'2" or 3", get out of the truck, it just makes me giggle. I'm sorry, it just makes me laugh every time.
I will never forget, I was in I used to have a horse van, so big diesel truck, big, huge thing, horse box van, lorry, whatever. And I remember going to pay a toll at the toll plaza, And it was like, it was his brother, and he was sitting in there, and he, and I was higher than even their toll was. And I remember him looking up, and he looks at me, and he's like, you could see the confusion on his face, and he's like, what the hell is a peanut like you driving a big old truck like that? I'll never forget his tone even for that.
Peanut.
But a peanut like you driving a big old truck like that.
I know one thing you're never going to do again. I don't know if this is on the list. I didn't even look. But it's one thing you're never going to do again, and that's be able to successfully pull up to an ATM machine without getting out. You're going to have to. There's no way you reach it.
And drive-thrus, never going to happen in a dually.
No, you won't reach the window. You have to open the door again.
You can't get through. You can't get through the little turn.
It's
hard enough in a regular truck. Another thing on their list is that the people that drive big trucks that have no reason to drive big trucks, why? Why would you do that if you don't have
I'm always amazed that when we drive through the city, how many big 3500s you see sitting in front of a urban house, you know, a row home. And you're going, what?
Exactly. One of the things they said, when you pull up next to a hybrid at a stoplight, quit judging me. You think I enjoy spending $4 a gallon on fuel? That's very true.
I love the speed limit sign they have on here. I just saw it. They have a speed limit sign that says speed limit 65. Fords, just do the best you can. Being Dodge people, that was funny. All the Ford people, and they were going, hey, wait a minute. Have you parked this thing? Can it fit in one parking space? You have to take four at the grocery store, don't you?
Well, I've only driven it once, and, you know, I didn't park it because I just had to run in somewhere, and the baby was sleeping, so I drove around. But I'm terrified to park this thing. This is, like, it is huge. I'm going to have to really work on getting used to it. And as some may know, I'm not – well, see, I'm really not bothered by dents in a truck. It just, you know, they're just part of life. And we have a gate that you have to drive through to get in and out of our property. And it's a manual gate. You have to get out, open the gate, drive through, close the gate. Well, on our last truck that wasn't a dually, we had the gate doesn't close all the way anymore. Let's just say that because somebody ran into the side of the gate with the non-dually truck. So my husband is terrified I'm going to do it again. So he's like, careful, careful. Yeah, got a couple inches on the right. Got a couple inches on the left. I'm like, can we just get a bigger gate? Why do we have to work this hard to drive in and out of our driveway? But because he knows that I'm not that particular when it comes to running
well,
anything,
you know,
and continuing to drive. Like, it just happens.
His defense,
you can hit stuff.
In his defense, though, being a fighter pilot, you know, I imagine dings and bumps in the plane is not really a good idea. So he probably has, you know, he's used to being careful with what he drives.
It's not a plane, Glenn. It's a truck, and they're meant to hit stuff. Why
now, wait a
big?
Minute. Wait a minute. You need, Jamie, you need to go back a little bit, and this is fair game because women do it this way. If I remember right, when you folks first moved into your home in Arizona, what is the first thing he did with the gator?
Yeah, he wrecked the gator.
On the
so
air?
There you go.
See?
Yep.
You
You're
can
right.
always use
Thank
that.
Thank you.
You can
Thank
use
you
that.
For
yeah.
being the person, Jennifer, who stores up all these little tidbits for me. Because I'm not good at it.
I can hold a grudge.
Glenn, I'm sorry about your luck, dude. You married a woman who can remember. She's
oh, she
like
remembers everything. Yeah, she remembers everything. Hey, I love this other one on here. This other one, this picture is funny as hell. It's a big pickup truck, a white pickup truck with mud all over the front of it. And it says, honked at a Prius, scared the crap out of it.
Yeah. It's hilarious. You guys, we'll post the link to this on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. Jennifer, did you post our question of the day?
I did.
Okay.
Have you gotten any answers yet? Have they started to come in yet? We got bits as one so far. Brenda says bits, so we'll see what answers start to roll in for that.
Okay, I'm going to take a picture of my saddle pad wall shelving unit that I have for saddle pads. And so if you guys have pictures, post them on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page.
Very good. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the S Equestrian Jumping episode that we do every month. Emily will be here co-hosting and has a lot of guests lined up to talk all about jumping, the world of jumping. Then Wednesday we'll be back with the EquityMFG.com Celebrity Trivia Challenge. We have a musical celebrity coming up on Wednesday. So stay tuned for that. We'll be posting more about that, and hopefully you can join us on Wednesday. Jamie will be back then. And don't forget to get, if you're interested in hosting, we talked about this before you got on today, Jamie. If you're interested in hosting, Jennifer has like 5 or 6 emails already. But if you're interested in hosting on the days Jamie is gone, you need to be available between 8:30 and 10:30 on August the 20th and the 22nd. That's Eastern time. That's Wednesday, August 20th, Friday, August 22nd. We're going to, Jamie, we have to discuss real soon what we're going to do for a audition. We'll have to do an audition, and we'll see who's going to end up being the host on those days. So we'll discuss that and come up with something. But,
and fortune could be yours, people, if you want to jump in here and just send Jennifer at Horse Radio Network an email if you would like to be a contender to host the show while I'm gone, which basically you just get to hang out and chat with Glenn. It's a super fun job.
Now you rejected somebody's suggestion. They had a serious suggestion, and they were being heartfelt, and you just rejected it offhand.
What'd I do?
Well, somebody suggested that I should host it with Alan, you know, Alan of the Western Radio Show.
Oh, yeah,
that's
not going to happen.
Right. Because Jamie is afraid that Alan and I would do nothing but talk about Jamie. So she really doesn't want an hour and a half on the air when she's not here. She doesn't want to have control over – she needs to have control over that situation if it was ever going to happen.
If we're going to get a big old male that wears cowboy hats, we're going to get Uncle Jimmy. It's not going to be Alan from the Western Radio Show. I mean, really.
Well, you know, Uncle Jimmy's a good possibility for some time when you're out. We could have some fun doing a show together. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's it. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a terrific day and be safe.